Hour number two with Harry Cooper, sharkhunters.com. One of the most unique and important things you can do is to join Shark Hunters. If you care about this world, where it's been, where it is, and where it's going, but especially if you like to learn about real history. There's nothing like it. No other organization I have ever seen comes close. Okay, Admiral, where do we go next?
I was just answering an email. One of our members just buzzed in to pledge $100 for our honors page.
Nice.
Okay, let's go next to photo number five. I told you one of the scientists aboard was became one of our members. That's Dr. Heinz Schlicke. He was not part of Operation Paperclip because he came over here early, but he was still used in the same way. We believe he's the one who designed the infrared triggers for
the American atomic bombs.
Yeah, I'm trying to pick the word for the detonator. 64 detonators on a shaped charge around in a spherical, right. et cetera. And also, if you remember your high school history, back when they used to teach history, the Trinity Project out there where they put a bomb up there, he was in charge of the whole thing.
How could a Nazi scientist be in charge of our nuclear program?
Lordy, lordy. The same thing could be said about our space program. Oh, well.
And just real quick, NASA was a German enterprise in America.
Yeah.
World War II, German scientists, technicians, engineers all came over here, maybe hundreds ultimately. We don't know how many. Lots and lots of them. And the first director of NASA was Dr. Kurt Debus from 1962, I believe, 1973. Dr. Debus was the director of Hitler's rocket program at Peenemünde all during the war. Okay?
What a surprise. We didn't develop too much ourselves. We just kind of borrowed it.
That's right.
Also in this chapter, you see a picture there, picture number six. That's Walter Schellenberger, head of the one branch of the German intel. And we go into stuff like that. There are confidential notes and reports and files throughout this whole book that we think they're declassed by now. I'm sure they are. Anyhow,
back to Heinz Schlicke for a minute. He was on that submarine.
He was
absolutely elite to be on that submarine, no question. And this picture was taken much later, of course. But
right when he was living in Waukesha, Wisconsin, a suburb of Milwaukee.
Got it.
Yeah.
Right. And Walter Schellenberg, again, a little bit more on Walter.
Yeah, he was, he was in Group 6D in the summer of 1944, and all that spelled out in here. He ultimately became head of one of the German intelligence groups, and we just kind of scooped him up and made him head of an American intelligence group.
We parasitized so many things from Germany the whole story is so much different than what we used to call history when they were still teaching what we used to call history. It's totally different. The winners write the story. They write the history. And they
corrupt
everything.
They not only write the history, they also write the definition of what is a war hero, that's us, and what is a war criminal, that's them.
That's right.
It's ex post facto, but in this case, it's okay. Normally, ex post facto, it doesn't hold water in a court, but now, okay, it works.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, picture number seven. That's a little schooner.
We've seen this picture before.
Lots of radio electronics hanging up off the mast, it looks like.
Right, and because it's wood, it didn't register on radar. They didn't have the high-tech radar we do nowadays that can catch, you know, somebody's wristwatch going through the air. This is either KFK-203 named Mary or KFK-204 named Barbara. KFK is short for Kriegsfisch Cutter. In other words, a fishing boat, a 90-ton fishing boat. And they was doing anything but fishing. If you look over to photo 8, they were coming and going many times, and there was a whole fleet of these things. I think there are about 15 of them. It's covered in the book. And they would be going to the east coast of Argentina. You look at photo 8, and you see where they're coming in, to a place called San Antonio Oeste, and which was a little dinky town. And it was owned by the Lawson Wool Company, and they had these little tiny offices all over South America where they'd buy wool from the sheep farmers and sell it, et cetera, et cetera. But it was also a place where the spies were coming and going. And if you look at
these, Harry, were these boats, these little schooners, going, transiting the Atlantic, or were they pretty much coastal service boats?
No. They were coming out of Norway, coming out of Spain, and coming all the way over here. They were bringing agents in, taking other agents back out. They were bringing gear, which was mostly radio equipment, because back in them days, a shortwave radio was a big piece of equipment with vacuum tubes, and so they'd
lots
have to have
tubes,
spare vacuum tubes and all sorts of stuff. And they'd be bringing in precious metal, you know, gold and stuff like that, to pay for over there, because Reichsmarks didn't work in Argentina, I don't think.
Those were some amazing sailors to take that small of a boat back and forth.
Yeah,
back and forth
90
like
ton
that.
Is not a real small boat.
I can see people on it, and it doesn't look that big.
Yeah, 90 tons, before Obama, when I had my boat, before I lost it because of Obama, and that's another story, it was only 4 tons, and I sailed open ocean with that thing.
Well,
you know, there are people that literally sail around the world in something the size of a bathtub. I think the latest I read back when I was a yacht bum, some guy was sailing around the world in a 6-foot sailboat.
I vaguely remember that story. Just ridiculous.
Yeah, you got to be some kind of nutcase to do it.
I mean, how do you even take food on board?
I don't know. I had plenty of food on my sailboat, and I had a very nice crew, 3 girls, and but we sailed in open ocean. We got caught in storms. You bounce around, you batten everything down, and you hang on. It's not the water to hurt you. It's all that hard stuff around the edge called land. When you bang into that, then you have a problem.
Got it. Well.
So, but anyhow, that's what these guys did. And now we click on over to photo number nine. We believe those are 2 U-boats that are down.
Sort of side by side?
Well, they look to be a mile or two apart. You can see the surf line down in the lower left corner.
Yeah.
And this is from an airplane. Now, there's one in Caleta de los Loras, which is the...
Oh, the other one is on the right. I see it.
Yeah, right, with the other arrow. In Caleta de los Loros, which means Parrot Cove, which is at the far northwestern corner of Golfo San Matias, there's supposedly a U-boat sunk there. People have seen it from afar. People have seen it flying over with airplanes because it's very, very shallow water. But when you go to find it, it ain't there. I don't know why, but I'm still open ocean certified with scuba. I'm ready to go if somebody wants to, you know, pop the money for it, because, you know, they cheap, especially nowadays. The damn airfare is off the chart.
You think Abel Basti and some of his money men would have gone after this problem, wouldn't you?
Interesting. In South America, his name is pronounced Abel, but anyhow, he did a lot of early work on Hitler living in South America, and he was an excellent, excellent journalist. But then, you know, he got a little credit from it, and according to some of my South American friends who went to his head, he could find, according to them, he could find Hitler underneath his dinner plate, he could find sunken U-boats in his coffee cup.
As long as the money was there. He was amazing, yes.
What can I say? He came up with another one about 4 months ago where he found a sunken U-boat, scuttled, because there was no action there in that area. Scuttled in fairly shallow water, diveable, 100 feet, I think it is. And I saw some pictures, and I thought, well, maybe there's some promise. And so I let him know I'd be willing to come down there at my own expense and charge him nothing, and I would dive the boat, and I could tell him what it was, because nobody in the world knows more about it than I do, because I do it 16 hours a day for 40 years. He never even had the decency to write back or tell me go to hell or anything. He hired some guy from Italy, from some museum, to come over, and the Italian guy dived and said, yep, it's a Type 7. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, Type 7 didn't have that kind of range. How did it get down there? And then they come out, you know, dribbles and drabs over the months. Then they said it's, I forget how many meters, but they said 260 meters, or feet, feet. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, a Type 7 is 220 feet. A Type 9 is 252 feet, so maybe they could make that mistake. Then they come back and said it's 300 feet long. Germany never had any submarines that length. The biggest one was a Type 10B. That was 294 feet. So now somebody's saying, well, maybe it's a floating dock or a barge that broke loose and went out there and sunk. I've still made the same offer. I'll come down on my own dollar and dive it. Not heard a peep from him.
Well, he doesn't want you. He doesn't want you involved. There's an ego.
That's it. He doesn't want to share the glory. No. Is what the way he's looking at it.
I'm sure he's had other people look this over. That there would be pictures taken and all that. He's got them. If there is anything there.
Yeah, but obviously, if it's 300 feet long, it's not a German U-boat.
They mismeasured it. Perhaps it's possible.
Maybe. Who knows? It might be a crashed flying saucer. Who knows?
Well, that's another story, isn't it?
Yeah, for another time.
Is this in the Gulf of San Matias?
San Matias? I'm not sure.
There?
I'm not sure. Okay. The guy that took that photo is dead now, so I can't come back and ask him about it. But there was U-boat
really
activity.
Yeah.
Take a look at photo number 10.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an expanded version of photo number 8. You see Gulf of San Matias where they were coming in.
Yeah.
And you look straight west and you see the circle around San Carlos de Bariloche. It's directly west.
Directly west. How interesting.
Yeah. Amazing. Almost like it was a plan. What do you think?
I think so.
Yeah.
And there's Nahuawapi. I can see it's blue.
That's right.
I think.
That's a beautiful lake. And great fishing in the summertime, and the Andes are right behind you there, so great skiing. We've seen pictures of Scorzini and also Hans Ulrich Rudel, the guy with the super pilot with only one leg. They were skiing up there.
Wow.
Why not ski in the Alps back in Bavaria? Because there was somebody here they wanted to see, I think.
Yep. Wow. Fascinating. All right. This is just a glimpse of some of the history that if you join Shark Hunters, you'll have access to all the time. And
right.
The magazine.
And let me point out, too, you're going to love this book. We have our guarantee. If you don't like the book, send it back and we'll refund your money. And I just did a tally the other day. We've sold over 45,000 books. Not one single book has been returned.
I can't imagine.
Out of 45,000.
Nah. This is gold, this material. Well done. All right, next picture is the super special offer. Order this month, and Shark Hunters will pay your shipping to anywhere in the world, and you get a hand-signed photo of a German veteran of the war. So keep that in
mind. You get the photo if you buy this particular book, Volume 3 of Hidden Secrets. Right. You buy any book, and we'll pay your shipping. So your best bet, if you don't have Volumes 1 and 2 of this, buy all three of them together. You still only get one picture, but we pay your shipping. Three books times $9 shipping, how much is 3 times 9?
27.
Yeah, I know. That saves you $27. You can almost buy lunch at McDonald's for that.
McDonald's. You don't want to eat lunch at McDonald's. I don't care what the circumstances.
I know.
Right.
I'm just joking about it. Anyhow.
Now, here's our next picture. This is a picture of Adolf Hitler after he had shot himself in the forehead. Right? Picture number 12.
Well, history says he shot himself in the right temple.
Get ready. All right. That's number one. He shot himself in the temple. Yes?
Yeah. Does that look like somebody's temple? No, and that ain't Hitler either. And then you look over at photo number 13. The bullet hole looks to me like it's kind of in the top of the head. And some forensic pathologist had a chance to examine that many years ago. And this is all in chapter 7 in that book. The skull was that of a younger woman, a woman in her 30s, I think it was. So no matter what you think of Hitler, he was not a cross-dresser. And it wasn't Eva Braun's skull either.
No.
It was a younger woman.
We have DNA and genetics now. This could all be, if it were allowed to be, it could all be researched and the truth would come out anyway.
The truth? Oh, my goodness. God forbid we should have the truth. Now we look at number 14, Hitler's teeth. See, what happened, we came out with the our best-selling book, Hitler in Argentina, which proves absolutely that he did not commit suicide. He lived out his life in South America. And then when it was getting popular, then, of course, those clowns came along and wrote their own book, which reads an awful lot like my book. And then they came out with the Hitler's skull in Russia to try to blunt the story. Well, then the story picked up again. For years, it was selling really well, and they come out with this thing about Hitler's teeth. And it explains in this chapter how Hitler's dentist magically discovered Hitler's dental records, even though they were burned. This guy recreated them from memory after being helped along with his memory.
Got it.
So, like I say, history.
The whole thing, and there's a series out there, I shouldn't even name it, but it's on the History Channel, I guess, and it's been around, and
M-I-C.
A lot of the material there. Yeah. I'm speaking for me, not Harry. It's all been plagiarized from Harry's work. I would say 80 to 90% of the lead material in there, it comes directly from Shark Hunters. It just does. That's me talking. All right.
Yeah.
Onward. All right.
Onward. Okay, number 15, you're familiar with this one.
It's a heartbreaker to see that. Able to make money in life instead of do what I do, I wouldn't have changed it, honestly. But if I had the money and I knew Harry and I knew Shark Hunters, that 1,700 acres that house is sitting on is priceless. And I would have bought that.
Yep. And this is now in, we're looking at chapter 16, which is Unbroken Codes, The Secret Flying Boat, A Missing U-Boat, and The Big Bird. This place, I got an email from a new member, nice guy, and he mentioned that Josh Gates on a TV series found Nazi coins here at Inalco, at Hitler's home. And I remember when the hunting Hitler clowns from TV found Nazi coins and little pill bottles up at the ruins of a house in northern Argentina that was actually a safe house, and they claimed they discovered it when it was really a state park open to everybody, and there was a map showing right to that house. And they found Nazi coins and pill bottles showing that Hitler was a drug addict and all that. And the park rangers told us that the film crew brought these things there, scattered them about, and then found them on camera.
Oh,
and,
good.
Yeah. That's and funny. I'm not saying Josh Gates did that here, but this place has been gone over for decades.
Right.
And the fellow who sent this information is. His name is Mike. He said, yeah, come to think of it, that coin looked awfully new and shiny to be buried for 50 or 60 years. And I don't watch Josh Gates. I forget the name of the show, but he reminds me of the Pillsbury Doughboy dressed like Indiana Jones. And years ago, they did a show on U-boats, and it was just full of errors, honest errors, but stupid ones. And I called the production company, which incidentally is called Ping Pong Productions. They also produce the Dr. Pimple Popper series. And I'm trying to tell this guy that we can help him. No charge, and they had errors, and everything I said was, oh, really, thank you. And I'm thinking, you son of a bitch, you're just playing along, and you're going to just forget about it when we hang up, which is exactly what happened.
See, the difference between all these other programs, and there have been a number of them, and Harry's work with Shark Hunters, is that Harry knew the people. He knew the principles. He had access to intelligence and intelligence agents from Germany. And these are top quality people. And these others, these producers of these programs, they know nothing except what they can, in many cases, I will say it for me, they can purloin from Shark Hunters. They go over Shark Hunters with a fine-tooth comb.
Yeah. Well, some years ago, after Gerard Williamson came out with that Gray Wolf, The Hunt for Adolf Hitler, that read a lot like my book, and they came out with the TV series based on his book. Doggone it, he was a member of Shark Hunters way back when. I can't imagine where he got all his information.
Oh, my. Yeah funniest was, thing, huh?
Yeah.
There's no honor out there anymore. There's just none.
Look at the bright side. You lead a good life, you go to heaven, you won't see some of these people.
Well said. All right, what's number 16 there? What are we looking at?
This is a good one. This is still part of chapter 16. This is the chart of where Hitler's plane landed. This is the big bird we refer to, the Ju-390 V2. And it landed up. You see that yellow spot and that long road going upper, northeast of that. That's where the plane landed. The pilot of that plane, one of the pilots, because they had several air crews, because they were in the air for a long time, 8,000 miles without refueling, he lived there in that oval I made in a town called Nuevo Berlin. New Berlin.
New? Really?
That's hell funny. Of a name for an Argentine play, but
yes,
German names all over down there. That's where he lived, and he died just some years ago, and I got an email from Pizarro saying, sadly, that this was one of our sources that had passed on, but that's where the pilot lived. Oh, no.
I don't remember. Do we release the name of that pilot or suspected pilot?
It's in the book. I don't remember it off the top of my head, but it's in that chapter. This is not the same place that you and I were thinking of for the other pilot. That was down in southern Patagonia. This map here, this chart, is Uruguay, right by the town of Paysandú, and south of that is Nueva Berlin.
So are we to suggest here that he landed in Uruguay, he and his entourage, and they were then motored down to their secret place near Bariloche.
Yeah, they went from Paysandú over to Estancia San Ramon, which is about 40 clicks away from San Carlos de Bariloche. And that was in July of 45, which is the dead of winter down there. So they could get as far as Estancia San Ramon. But then they were stuck. They couldn't move any. This was 1945. They didn't have superhighways. Didn't have any highway at that point. So then when it got springtime, they moved over there, and then they went to Inalco, which is the estate on San Carlos by San Carlos de Bariloche. It's actually
look at the picture
Vicente Angostura.
Correct. That's the little village. Look at the picture of Harry, the color picture, picture number 15, and that is the house that they lived in for about 10 years.
Yep, definitely. Right. And everybody there knew it. They even had tour buses going by. Mm-hmm. Not there, but some of the other places, you know, where some of his bodyguards lived, and the the secret nuclear research laboratory on an island there in Lake Nahuelwapi, built by German scientists 2 years after the end of the war.
They were working on cracking the atom down there, okay? And they may have done it. We don't know.
They did have the atom-splitting bomb, as they call it. They could have made a nuclear bomb, and maybe they did. But here they were working on cold fusion, and nobody's ever been able to produce cold fusion. Fusion is the thermonuclear part of it. Now, in a hydrogen bomb, and the back end of it, you have a small atom bomb to produce the instant incredible heat necessary to set off what's called the crush area, made of deuterium and tritium, and it has to be set off by intense heat. But to create that fusion without the heat, nobody's been able to do it yet. You can have a nuclear blast, no problem, but a thermonuclear blast, you got to have the heat to set it off. And nobody's been able to produce cold fusion, but Dr. Richter there claimed that he did, and Juan Perón was touting to everybody in the world that Argentina is now a nuclear power, and allegedly Bormann, who was still living down there at the time, was not happy. And so then the story came out that Dr. Richter was just pretending so that he could bilk more money out of Perón. And on one side says that they sent experts down there to do certain tests, and they all failed. And then they found out later that half the machinery they were testing was not even plugged in. And the previous director of the Atomic Energy of Argentina, well, after Richter, is a good friend of mine, Dr. Mario Marascotti, and he told me flat out, Richter was a fraud, he never got cold fusion, and he was bilking Perón for money.
So the island, the whole island effort was essentially nil. Nothing happened there.
Accordingly, that's right. I've been to that island I don't know how many times, and it used to be controlled by the Prefectura, which is their version of the Coast Guard. And we'd go there, and I'd show them my Coast Guard auxiliary credentials. Yeah, fine, come on aboard, and it was well kept. Then, 10, 15 years ago, the Prefectura pulled out. Everything's deserted. There's stickers and weeds waist high, and it's going to hell in a handbasket, too.
Hmm. Did you ever take a dosimeter there to check and see if there are any radioactive residue
of any kind?
We did.
I borrowed one from one of our members, and Dr. Charles Ellis was with us. He's one of the reasons the Spitlickers called me a Nazi, because he was on my advisory board. Oh, God, he's a Nazi. Well, I don't know if he is or not, but guilt by association.
We had him on the program, Harry. Didn't we have him on?
I know it. He's a decent guy. He's a psychiatrist. So anyhow, he came with us, and his two daughters were there. They're not kids. They were in their 30s, I think. And we were in the reactor room, which is the only part of that complex that has been dynamited. Everything else is just standing, falling apart. And he's bending over, looking at stuff, taking pictures, and his daughter says, Daddy, what does it mean when the reader says 35? And poor Charlie about turned himself inside out. And she was only kidding. It was showing zero.
Oh, that's a good joke, though. I get it.
Yeah.
Okay,
anyhow.
Now back to picture 16 real quick.
Yeah.
It's got the Mercedes appears there twice that I can see, the name Mercedes, mm-hmm. Uruguay. Anything about Mercedes and that particular location that we should mention?
nothing that comes to mind. And okay. I got this chart from Pizarro, and he's no longer with us. He died very suspiciously.
Yes, he did. I remember. Okay, very good. Onward to next picture, and that would be, I guess, the...
17.
Yeah, now that location, is that, where is that? That's in Germany,
That's
right?
Somewhere in Germany, but the point in this chapter, the pilots hated this thing until they were in the air. It's just an ugly, ugly airplane. They called it the Fliegende something or another. In other words, a flying wooden shoe. Hole shoe, yeah. They're Fliegende hole shoe. The flying wooden shoe. You'll notice it's got three engines. The middle engine is bigger than the two outboard engines because it's swinging a four-bladed prop, and this thing is diesel-powered, not avgas, it's diesel, and the pilots hated it when they were in the water or on the ground because they didn't have visibility over that big, ugly nose, but once they got in the air, they loved it because this thing would cruise forever. Well, at the closing moments of the war, one of these guys landed at Duvansee, the lake in Berlin, under heavy Soviet ground fire, landed, was there for a while. It's all in this chapter. Took on passengers. Who?
Very special passengers, we think.
Yeah, but we don't know who. You can draw your own conclusion. And then they took off again under heavy ground fire from the Soviets. Well, of course, that's what you do in a war. And they climbed out and they went up to Norway, which was the only part of the Third Reich that was still totally controlled by Germany. And who did they bring? They don't have any information one way or another. But then shortly after that, that big Ju-390 took off from there and flew down to South America.
I think you can connect the dots on that one. That's what we think most logically was the method of escape from the bunker, the real escape.
Yeah, I would think so.
And the transit. Okay, number 18.
Number 18.
Rudolf Meyer.
Yeah, and they called him Blechmeyer, which is the German word for bronze or brass or something. He and his boat are missing. There are very, very, very few boats that we don't know where they are. You know, some.
You're talking about boat. You're talking about U-boat. U-boat.
Yeah. There are some sources that come out and say, oh, there's 30 U-boats unaccounted for. Oh, there's 100 Type 21s unaccounted for. Now that's baloney. We've accounted for all, but you can count them on your hand. And this is one of them that we can't account for. Was commander of 1055, and history shows where 1055 was sunk on the 30th of April, 1945. However, that was a mistake. That was U-1107 that was sunk there, and 1055, nobody knows where the hell it came from. On the 2nd of May, 1945, the U-boat land station received a Funkverstimmelt, in other words, a garbled radio message, and they think it was U-1055 moving south. And as of the 2nd of May, 1945, 1730 hours, that's the last they ever heard of this boat, and nobody knows where it went. Was it lost? Did it go to South America? Nobody knows. But it is lost today.
All right. Very good. Fascinating. This book is just, it's going to be a journey for a lot of you. This is going to be especially fascinating. All of these things. They're all, each chapter for each one, basically.
Yeah.
All right. picture 19. What do we got?
Yeah, 19. That's also the Type 21 German U-boat spotted in Argentine waters. And this is where your listeners are going to say, what, is he nuts? No, that was in 1960. And I remember it because I was in the Air Force, and the Argentines couldn't get this guy. It was in Golfo Nuevo, which is a small gulf with only about a 7 mile wide entrance and a maximum depth of 300 feet, which is an ASW guy's dream. Submarines can't hide well in that, but the Argentines couldn't get them. We sent down some of the best ASW guys from the U.S. Navy with some of the most advanced equipment, and they couldn't get them. And that's how I remember it, because inter-service rivalry, we're all laughing at the Navy because they couldn't get these boats. Type 21s.
When you say get them, what do you mean, get them?
They were trying to sink them after a while. First off, they did with ultrasound or whatever the hell, sent them a message and says surface and depart.
What year would this be approximately?
1960.
All right. What are you saying, that U-boats were still navigating the waters down there in 1960? Is that what we're
thinking?
They've
been seen. They got photos. There are photos of them, and these are drawings taken from those photos. There's a lot more to that than people realize, but that's another whole world.
Wow. So some of the boats ended up down there still in service, so to speak, but very clandestinely. That's
according to our mutual friend, who we won't identify, who's a current spook working today,
right.
They had them down there.
Wow.
And that's all we'll say about that.
Very good.
Then we look at...
Get
20.
The book, friends. This is all amazing. Amazing.
20.
Number 20.
That's an artist concept of the Big Bird, the JU-390, only this was V1, over Manhattan. Mm-hmm. According to witnesses, the JU-390 did fly to within 10 or 20 clicks of New York City and returned. Uh-huh. There's no written documentation, but... various witnesses. And then we find they were flying to Japan the last couple of years of the war, and people say, how could that be? Well, they go over the top, went on the polar route to Manchu Island or some damn thing in the Sakhalin chain. You look at photo 21, and there's the there's the abandoned runway that they were using. They were flying out of, Vardafoss in Norway and landing there. And if you look where I've circled, those are all fuel drums.
Yeah.
And then you look at the next picture, number 22, and you see what's on those fuel drums. Kraftstoff gasoline, 200 liters, which is 55 gallons. Fuhrgefahrlich, and I think that means don't smoke around here or you're going to blow it up. And it says Wehrmacht, the German military. These were fuel drums on a Japanese airstrip. Does that sink it in yet?
I've wanted one of these for years, yes.
What, one of them oil drums?
Yeah, I'll take one. Sure.
Well, unfortunately now, that's under Russian control, and there was a time with my Russian connections we could have gotten permission, but now the U.S. and Russia are not the best of friends.
No. 1943. Okay, look at the label up there on the top.
Yeah, I know.
Label. And it's rusting around the edge, but the actual steel, I assume they were made of steel, is still intact. Remarkable.
Yeah, which is surprising since it's on an island, and this runway is only not even a mile from the ocean.
Right. Well, that's a little bit of history, again, that nobody else knows. Now you do. So it's in the book.
Read the book. You'll know it, too.
Wow, this is a great book. They're all great, but this one is another step forward, and you have so much more that you're moving forward. It's in the
pipeline. Oh, God, yes. We have so much of this information. This is stuff we've done in our magazine over the years. So all I have to do is copy and paste and slug in photos.
Right.
And there we are.
Yeah, that's great.
We make it available to everybody.
You have much, much work to do, my friend, and this is going to be really something. All right, the next
picture.
That's
why I'm doing 16 hours a day.
I know. Number 23.
23, this is our upcoming...
This is your opportunity, for those of you who still have the opportunity, in mind of traveling, and that is a gift nowadays in this world. But you can go and see so much with Gary, Bavaria and Austria this coming fall. Go ahead.
Right. And that castle that you see there, that was used in the movie Where Eagles Dare, and it's just now been opened up, and we're going to go visit that castle, plus several other castles, a fantastic air museum, and just history, and of course the Eagle's Nest. You got to go to the Eagle's Nest, everybody does, and naturally Oktoberfest, which is just an incredible experience. They highlight the beers from Munich, Oompa bands, and great food, just a hell of a good time.
Looks like an Oompa waitress there.
Yeah, and our friend Peter Hansen told me, and I haven't tried this yet, but you see these girls that are well endowed, and they're carrying like 6 mugs in each hand, and so he says they're helpless, and you're supposed to, this is tradition, you're supposed to go around and pinch them on the ass. I don't think I'm ready to try that, because I don't want to be wearing a dozen beer steins.
No. That looks like a wonderful trip. Well,
it's great. It's a lot of fun.
How much room do you have? 6, 8, 10? What can you take?
10. We can take as many as want to come. There have been times we've had 56 people, so we've had a bus and a big van and whatever. Doesn't matter.
I would urge all of you, if you have any idea of ever going to see history as it still exists, you better take this chance. This world, and God only knows what's going to be happening between now and September, but if it's still functional, I would urge you to take this opportunity and go. Go. And it's quite affordable.
We have so much fun. And as we say, you can't take a bad picture, you can't get a bad meal, and you can't get a bad beer. And the people are warm and friendly, and you're walking in history, and it's just incredibly beautiful there.
Wow. So, and the Eagle's Nest alone would be worth the trip. That's the lower left picture.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
That was a birthday gift.
Yeah,
to Hitler.
50th birthday.
Believe it or not.
And from the deck up there, which is about 6,000 feet up, I think, you can actually see the castle in Salzburg, which is a hell of a long distance, but you can see it.
Oh, so fascinating.
We're running the clock up, so let me skip photo 24, because we've seen that, and comes up in another chapter, but let's look at 25.
Okay, number 25.
Right, there's a chapter there, German and Argentine vets post-war. They were getting together for gatherings all the way up until 1995.
For decades.
Especially on the 20th of April, which was Hitler's birthday. They got together, and way after the war ended, Juan Perón made a speech and said, "We shall never forget and will never be able to repay our debt of gratitude we owe to our brothers in the German military." What did he mean by that? Well, they were getting together up until 1995, when Sam Donaldson, the newscaster with the fiberglass haircut, outed Priebke in Bariloche. Then everybody stopped going around. Of course, what we don't read after that is Sam Donaldson got in a jam because he had manipulated money or something to that effect. So, but at any rate, here you see. And I've been in some of these places where they had their gatherings. No traces of it now, except big hall.
I guess we could almost call them. I don't know what year this photo was taken, but look on the left at the. We'll call them Hitler Youth, for the lack of a better term. Easily, look at them.
Yep. Well, this was taken post-war. I don't know the date though, but post-war. So. Yeah, lordy,
it looks
lordy.
Like the bottom picture, the bottom of the picture has a number of people. It looks like we're identified by somebody.
Exactly.
And they're women were sitting down there. This is people have no idea of what really happened. It's just incredible. Well, you can. You all can now understand what really did occur. And it was a story that is just phenomenal.
It's all been buried.
Yes.
Because it doesn't fit the narrative.
Now, here's our Michael. This guy has been a real pain in the ass for a number of reasons.
Yep.
And I don't know if he's going to wake up before he eventually matriculates out of here, but...
I don't know. My contact between him and the lady who has been our go-between has suddenly cut off. She won't answer my phone calls. She won't answer my emails.
Really?
And so I don't know. But this guy was, I won't go into great depths on it, but he was a kid during the war years, and his father was high up in the German army and disappeared. His mother took him and moved down to Bolivia, where they had a sugar plantation. And he grew up there, and his mother was good friends with Magda Goebbels. And I won't go too much farther into Magda's plantation down there, but this guy, Michael Lehman, was there. He saw it all happen. He got kicked off his horse one time, broke his arm. When he woke up, the doctor who was setting his arm was Mengele. And click on the next picture, 27. This was taken during the war. But the guy number two in the picture, that was Fritz Wiedemann, who was Hitler's commanding officer in World War I. And he ran the coffee plantation in Bolivia near the sugar plantation where Michael grew up. And Michael said that in January of 1962, let me look at my note here. Yep, January of 62, everybody in the plantation had to stand at attention along the driveway because Hitler came and he was in a wheelchair. And as they rolled him up the driveway, everybody had to do the so-called Nazi salute, which is in reality the old Roman salute. And he saw him there in January of 62. Then a month later, in February of 62, I think the 13th, I'd have to look at my notes, that's when Hitler died. And these were interesting people in this photo. One, of course, is Hitler. Two is Fritz Wiedemann. Three is Joseph Goebbels. Four is his wife Magda Goebbels, who incidentally owned about 50% of the stock of BMW. And number five is Princess Stephanie von something or another. She was a Jewish commoner from Austria. She married a prince and became a princess, divorced him, and then became Fritz Wiedemann's mistress. And they were living down there in Bolivia.
And Magda, nice-looking lady, was sitting in that picture right in front of the man who fathered one of her daughters.
Yeah, Holdeen. He fathered Holdeen.
And there's much
Joseph
more
Joseph Goebbels
ahead.
Knew that they were having an affair, and he put it in his own diary. It was breaking his heart, but what could he do about it? I mean, Hitler was untouchable.
Right. We're going to learn in the future a lot more about Magda. We already have. We have done programs about Magda before, but we're working on something. Harry is a big...
Yeah, there's a hell of a big shocker coming out about Magda and her daughter Holdeen, but... you know, as you know, Jeff, some friends did sort of a book on it that's 1,400 pages long, and they want me to get it published. You can't publish a 1,400-page book. It'll look like the Manhattan phone book back when we had phone books.
We need to talk about this. We need to people will pay for a print version of that book. People will pay. Even if it's $300-$400, they will pay. I would in a second. Daughter of, right there, Magda, number four, Holdeen, right? The daughter of the man standing behind her kept a diary. It's a 1,400-page, fully illustrated diary of her life from the time in war-torn, war Germany all the way down through her time in South America.
Yeah, and I have that book in my hand. The thing weighs about literally 10 pounds.
Well, there are ways to do this.
I don't know if her diary is 1,400 pages long, but the book that the two doctors did about it is 1,400 pages, and it absorbs
Harry, we've got to do this. I'm serious. Okay. We have to do
this. Keep beating me up about it.
All right. But it's critically important that that book be made available because it is in English now. It is
in English, and I have it all on. I have it on a thumb drive, and it's also on my computer. So, however, like so many other books, I've helped get published by other authors, like Clark's book. Every chapter is in a different font style, a different size, different lines. I had to go through Clark's book four times to get the damn thing all processed to where it all made sense on the computer.
In the 20-some years I knew Clark, a long time, he just wouldn't keep things standardized. He'd always do a little bit here, a little bit there, and he'd want to sell a chapter at a time. Anyway, we got it done as a book. So.
Yeah, and it's selling like mad, too. The big bestseller we have, of course, is Hitler in Argentina, and that's been 30,000 copies of that book. But Space, The Final Frontier, is coming up very fast. And I think a lot of that is because Dick Allgaier is advertising it to his crypto viewing people, and a lot of them are buying it. So those books are coming up fast. And these three books, Hidden History of World War II, Volume 1, 2, and 3, they're selling very well.
Well, the copy of it I got and sent to you had to go through the whole thing and standardize it all. The formatting was a mess. It was a mess. But it all worked out. You did it. You made it happen.
Yeah,
and I was supposed to do it, but I don't have the damn time. So you don't have the time either, but you did it. So we got it done. And it's a big deal. Big book. Clark was there. He knew all the Germans at NASA and the Cape. They took him in as essentially an equal. They respected him, and they shared a lot of things.
He knew all the people that committed suicide, too.
Yes. Yes,
and there's brackets around that word suicide.
Yeah, big ones. Listen, that was a wonderful program, and I hope everyone will take advantage of this. Join Shark Hunters, get a copy of the book, Hidden Secrets of World War II, Volume 3, and cast off for a wonderful voyage. Just incredible what you've got. All right, amigo, you take care, and we'll talk sooner than later.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Good night. Go rest.
Yeah, I got to take Asha for a walk first, then I go to bed.
Now she takes you for a walk first.
Yeah, I know. She loves it when it gets cold here. It was 30-something degrees the other morning. She's just dragging me down the street. Them huskies are powerful dogs.
She's got a fur coat that won't quit, that's for sure.
I know. She got two coats. One upper and one outer and one inner. And every 6 months they say they blow their coat and just fur all over the damn place.
That's true. All right. Okay, you be well. Talk to you soon, Harry. Great job.
Roger that. Have a great day. Good night, everybody.
Okay. Harry Cooper, sharkhunters.com. The Hidden Secrets of World War II, Volume 3, and much more to come. We'll be right back. Stay there.